The LexisNexis Corporate and Securities Law Community Podcast. Presentations and interviews with leading attorneys and industry professionals. On this edition, Carol Basri on the webinar Hot Topics in Corporate Compliance. The opinions expressed by guests interviewed on LexisNexis Legal Podcasts do not necessarily reflect those of Reed Elsevier Incorporated, LexisNexis, subsidiary companies, shareholders, employees, or customers, and should not be considered legal advice. Carol Basri is Senior Vice President of Bellion Brown & Basri, LLC. She's also President of the Corporate Lawyering Group, LLC, and the Corporate Lawyering Association, and an adjunct professor at the University of Pennsylvania Law School. Carol joins us today to give us a preview of topics that will be discussed in the upcoming webinar, Hot Topics in Corporate Compliance, which takes place Wednesday, October 20th at noon Eastern Time. Carol, thanks for being with us on this LexisNexis Legal Podcast.
Thank you.
Carol, talk about this webinar, Hot Topics in Corporate Compliance.
Well, I'm very excited about it because there's been a lot of new developments in the corporate compliance area. And Hot Topics allows us to go through a lot of those really interesting and important developments. I think that we've lined up a really interesting group of people to speak. We have Rebecca Walker from Kaplan & Walker, LLP, Michael Levine from Epstein, Becker & Green, and Don Dowling from White & Case. And we really have the superstars of the compliance area who will be speaking to us. And I think, frankly, that this is an opportunity to understand the hot topics in compliance and also pique interest in the book that we have, Corporate Compliance Practice Guide, because that is a recent Lexis publication that I have put together, and all of these people are involved in that publication, so I'm very, very excited.
And a number of hot topics will be discussed during this webinar. Let's touch on a few of them, if we may, including the revisions in the federal sentencing guidelines. What are some of the proposed changes?
Well, they include an enhanced emphasis on providing reporting to the board of directors and actually pushing for direct reporting to the board of directors by the compliance officer or the ethics officer. That's a really big one. And the other one is that remediation should follow after you have identified some misconduct in the corporation. It's not just to report it, but it's also to remediate it. So these increased emphasis on enhanced reporting and remediation, I think, are two of the biggest changes in the proposed sentencing guidelines.
Well, let me ask you, who should be reporting to and from the compliance officer?
You want to create independence in the reporting process, which is why it's important that you're not reporting to the general counsel or the chief compliance officer, but that you're able to go right to the top officer, the president or the CEO. And also that you're able to go directly to the board of directors. Because, for example, the CEO or the chief financial officer or the CEO could be involved in the misconduct. So the way to deal with that is to have direct reporting to the president, CEO, and or board of directors, and dotted line to other officers in the corporation, like the general counsel or the CFO. And that allows the chief compliance officer, chief ethics officer, to have the flexibility to determine who will be able to deal with the complaint in the most effective way. So that reporting piece fits very nicely into these proposed changes to the sentencing guidelines.
Corporate social responsibility, another hot topic that will be addressed and focused on during this webinar. And also, whether or not that now includes sustainability and green issues.
Well, corporate social responsibility really started with the idea of no prison labor, no slave labor, no child labor. It then expanded into, in the 90s, looking at some of the places where things were manufactured. So you had Kathy Lee Gifford case, the Nike case, and we started to look at the conditions under which things were manufactured. Even if there was no slave labor, prison labor, or child labor, but abusive work conditions, not giving a living wage, a fair wage, working workers beyond their capacity time-wise, strength-wise, these were all seen as negative things under corporate social responsibility. Now, this umbrella has become an opportunity to start talking about sustainability issues and green issues. And I think we really have an opportunity to raise social awareness within the corporation that, you know, the first mission is to earn money for your shareholders, but don't do that at the risk of hurting your reputation or creating a culture of ethics. And that requires that you're sensitive to issues like sustainability and green issues. I think those are very, very interesting and important issues in this day and age. And anything we can do to foster those issues in the corporation, I think, is a real plus.
Let's jump ahead a little bit to another hot topic, codes of conduct.
Well, codes of conduct are very important because that's really the entry point to policies and procedures within the corporation and also internal controls. And the first thing you have to do is make sure employees understand the code of conduct that they're operating under in the corporation. Think of it almost like an agreement, a contract between the employees and the corporate entity, the officers, the directors. And so people have to understand what's involved if they're going to follow it. And then you need to think about what are the essential components of a code of conduct. Now, it's important that it's clear, but it's also important that it's not too long and that it has certain basic parts to it, like no discrimination, like keeping the competitive spirit alive and not allowing for antitrust and marketing issues, unfair business practice, predatory practices. It's also very important that we talk about things like corporate social responsibility and preserving the environment. So those are just some of the key issues that you should find in almost every code of conduct. But we're going to go through a list of what are those key things that are essential in every code of conduct.
And ethics. How about a culture of ethics? How do you create a culture of ethics?
Well, the first thing is you need that leadership at the top. And then you have to talk about whether you're going to create a culture of ethics or a culture of compliance. With compliance, what you're doing is saying these are the things you should do and shouldn't do. And it's a do's and don'ts list. And if something's not on there, then people scratch their head and do what they want. In a culture of ethics, it's more holistic. What you're doing is creating a culture where people who don't know what the particular rule is will ask the questions necessary to come to, hopefully, the right conclusion on what to do. And that, to me, requires that leadership at the top, which I started with. So,
well, how do you foster leadership at the top there on ethics and compliance?
Well, you know what? Having a good, strong leader who's really behind the compliance program is absolutely critical. And then to choose a compliance officer, ethics officer, who really walks the walk and talks the talk of ethics is extremely important. So you want to do, starting with background searches on your key people involved with compliance, clearly your CEO and your president of the company, you want to make sure they're people of integrity. If people have a bad track record, I mean, if they've had federal violations brought against them, you know, scratch your head and say, maybe not the right person. And then what do they say? Do they kind of smile and give a signal to the rest of the organization that this is the code of conduct and this is our mission, but our true mission is making money and don't worry about the rest of it? So if that's the way they're operating, you're not going to have that leadership at the top. But if what they're doing is say, you know, I'm going to do the right thing. If there is an environmental spill, we report it before we do anything else. We don't engage in cover-ups. We believe that finding out that something was done incorrectly is an opportunity to show the company personnel and ourselves that we believe in the right thing and we correct it, that remediation piece I talked about. So it's very important that there be clear at the top leadership and reporting. And, for example, that the leadership wants to make sure that if there is something negative that happens, it gets reported to the board of directors. So the board of directors has the knowledge and oversight to do their job. Getting a leader at the top is somebody who walks the walk and talks the talk, doesn't just do it when it's convenient, but when it's hard.
What's happening in the area of compliance programs and deferred prosecutions?
Well, what we're seeing is a rise in deferred prosecutions and non-prosecution agreements as well. And what that means is that what we're seeing right now is that not only will you have the government investigate, for example, the Justice Department investigate, but they may appoint somebody to oversee going forward remediation. And that person will act as a trustee or guardian over the situation and will report back to the court, sometimes for 3 to 5 years, on the status of the compliance program and what enhancements need to be made so that the company does not fall back into a pattern where they could be prosecuted for failure to observe the compliance program and laws and regulations in the United States and in the states. Various states. So this is really important. I think having somebody that's overseeing the compliance program appointed for that purpose and reporting back to the regulators is a growing area. And I think that we're going to see more and more of that because what we're finding is just fines and penalties are not enough and that to change culture, you need a culture changer within the organization. Very often, this will stimulate a corporation to appoint a new compliance or ethics officer who can work hand-in-hand with the person that's appointed to oversee the compliance program. And this can lead to really embedding a culture of ethics within the corporation.
Another hot topic. What is the best approach to creating effective auditing and monitoring?
Well, effective auditing and monitoring really comes down to making sure you have a risk assessment, and then that risk assessment has identified and rated the risks properly and is able to obtain and figure out when new risks are coming about. And then, once you've got that risk assessment in place, you want to audit and monitor on it. So you want to work closely with the internal audit department because you may not have adequate staff in the compliance office, or you may want to have your staff work with the internal audit so that when you go out to remote locations, the internal audit department as well as the compliance staff have the questions at hand to ask and can work together to make sure that those questions and audits are done. And you want to have some spot audits, you want to have some regular audits, and you want to make sure that it's a full-bodied audit process. You also want to make sure that the monitoring is really done effectively, and that's why I mentioned spot audits, because when you show up and do an audit that's unexpected, you often get different results than if people have planned for it for months. So what you want to do is make sure you have a mixture of routine audits as well as some spot auditing. And you do that auditing on a regular basis so that it can be reported up to the board of directors and the president and the CEO. Doing those things really creates what we call an effective auditing and monitoring program.
Another topic for you. How can you use the attorney-client privilege to protect risk assessments in civil code jurisdictions?
Well, there are two kinds of jurisdictions. And remember, most compliance programs are global these days. I would say that 30 to 40% of business now is operating on some kind of global basis. So for those big corporations, it's very important that in civil code jurisdictions, which do not have the attorney-client privilege for in-house counsel in most jurisdictions, again, you need to check on the individual country, that you look into protecting risk assessments with the protection of attorney-client privilege, and you can get that. In fact, even more effectively than in common law countries, by utilizing outside counsel to perform the risk assessment and then coordinating that risk assessment with in-house counsel and consultants so that you have consultants who know compliance well, who can assess what risks and what questions need to be asked, as well as outside counsel who can provide the attorney-client privilege, and they can coordinate with in-house counsel to do the interviewing so that the product of the assessment can be considered attorney-client privilege in civil code countries. This is actually harder to do in common law countries, even though in-house counsel has the attorney-client privilege. One of the problems is for in-house counsel that sometimes this is only seen as self-evaluative, and the self-evaluative privilege is not necessarily protected under the attorney-client privilege in most states. About 15 states have it, but they have it for things like environmental, but not for the total risk assessment that's needed by the corporation.
Yeah. You know, this is just the tip of the iceberg of the areas that are going to be covered in this webinar, Hot Topics in Corporate Compliance, October 20th, noon Eastern. Again, who are your co-hosts for this webinar?
We have Rachel Walker from Kaplan & Walker. We have Michael Levine from Epstein, Becker & Green. And we have Don Dowling from White & Case. And I want to thank Lexis for doing a wonderful job of bringing this webinar to in-house counsel and other practitioners interested in learning more about what's happening in corporate compliance today. And I also want to thank you for the opportunity to have a book that really goes into depth on corporate compliance practice guide, The Next Generation of Compliance. So thank you again for allowing that treatise to be published.
Thank you very much. Again, October 20th for the webinar, Hot Topics in Corporate Compliance. Carol, thank you very much for your time and being part of our LexisNexis Legal Podcast.
My pleasure and honor. Thank you.
Carol Bassery, Senior Vice President of Bailey & Brown & Bassery and President of the Corporate Lawyering Group and the Corporate Lawyering Association. Thank you for listening to the LexisNexis Corporate and Securities Law Community Podcast. Copyright 2010 by LexisNexis, a division of Reed Elsevier Incorporated. Visit the LexisNexis communities at www.lexisnexis.com/community. LexisNexis, Total Practice Solutions. I'm Steve Bursler. Thanks for listening.